Hello, you're listening to Season 3 of the Hypotheticals podcast. I'm Adriano.
I'm Andy, and this episode is sponsored by Eddie Weddle's Edifice Wedding Excellence Emporium. We'll get everything ready for the most monumental day of your life.
Andy, I'm going to bring back a classic question. How do we revolutionise sports?
Oh, it's been a classic theme of our podcast, sports, throughout and many a topic.
It has.
I think we started the first episode, we mentioned sports, right? I think that was in there.
I think so. I think I went on at some small length about how I felt like football needed more traps.
Yeah.
That's as far as we got.
I don't really remember the question itself, but that was basically it, wasn't it? We basically touched on football needing traps and then like topic done, next.
More or less, yeah. I think we didn't do the thorough deep dives that we're known and loved for these days. And this is a rich seam that merits further interrogation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, to kick things off then, and also, it's a well-timed episode, not for the release of this episode, but for the recording, because it's the England game tonight, the final.
Oh, yes.
And I'm sure that football will be going home, as the saying goes.
Anyway,
but yes, I was thinking, though, it might be more exciting, and football was when I was thinking for this, if for a team game, a certain number of your players are picked randomly from the crowd. So if Ooh. You go, you've got to be willing to be potentially humiliated in front of millions of people.
It's like sitting in the front row of a magic act.
Exactly.
You might be called upon.
Yeah, or at a comedy gig, you might be interacted with by the comedian. So maybe people pay more for those seats or whatever, but really anyone from the crowd could be picked on to, and probably at random, to be part of the team, and maybe half of them are professionals, half of them are fans, but it would just create a fun dynamic where half the people probably don't know what the hell they're doing and have sort of got to be very quickly like briefed beforehand by the manager and the rest of the team to be like, what are our tactics going to be, what are your strengths and that sort of thing.
I love that image because also people show up to sports games in a variety of different states. Mm-hmm. You know, of dress, of inebriation, of like physical sort of fitness, and the image of the I'm picturing the what's it called, the Jumbotron, like they pan that kiss cam around and then whoever it lands on has to, like, you know, except this would be like the who's gonna be our next star player, and then they pan it around the crowd and then like it's little Timmy, and then the 7 year old has to, you know, this 7 year old
you're going in goal, Timmy.
He sat down and then he has to, and then like, yay, and the parents are like cheering next to him, and then he gets up and hobbles onto his crutches.
Oh no.
And swings down onto the...
Yeah, or there's like a big kind of grabber claw that comes down and picks him up.
That's even better.
Puts him on the pitch, yeah.
Because I think it gets dangerous once you start adding qualifiers. Like, oh, well, we can't let little Timmy because he's only 7. Or, well, he's recovering from knee surgery. Or, you know, like, you can't... Well, only adults then. Or, like, only people who've consented. Or only people who are fit enough. You know, you start narrowing this down enough, you end up with only professional athletes again. What was the point?
Yeah, you've got to run the risk of having someone who literally can only sit there and do nothing, or, you know, just is really bad at football for any reason.
If there isn't at least a slim chance that there's going to be like a month old infant sat in that goal, then I'm not getting the thrill that I seek in my
and
sports.
They're not allowed any caregivers with them. They're a month old, but they've committed to the game, and that's where they're going to be.
The claw has chosen. I'm sorry. The mother or father needs to like cling on and be dragged with if they want to assist. That's just that's the rules. Or maybe it's not individuals. Okay, you got to even things up a little bit. Like, okay, a baby is probably not going to do so well in goal. How about this? It's not a number of individuals. It's an aggregate weight.
Right. Okay.
It just needs like this volume of participants. So the claw just gathers until it's like within like a tolerable limit. It's not going to be, you know, exact.
So you could theoretically have a game where there's 11 adults on one side and like 50 toddlers on the other.
Yeah, I mean that'd be more interesting, wouldn't it? It would be like one of those one horse-sized duck or a 100 duck-sized horses type scenarios. It would enable that. And it wouldn't happen often, so when it did, it would be very special.
It would, yeah. They'd be a memorable game. Because you wouldn't want to like slide tackle a four-year-old, would you? That'd be quite... You know, they might do quite well because, you know, they're too cute. I can't tackle Timmy. I can't tackle, you know, little Heather. They need to just play the game and,
not with
you know,
that attitude.
Score that goal. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, certainly cuteness would be an advantage. You'd have all these different advantages coming to the fore. And also, you'd have different incentives, like in going to a game. Because obviously with a weight thing, I mean, there's an obesity crisis, as we know. So you could feasibly end up with like four very heavy people on one team and like eight sort of thinner people on the other team. So maybe that makes you think a bit like, oh, I've bought season tickets. Time to start, you know, getting into shape a few months beforehand. It's like getting that beach bod. You got to get football ready to watch just in case.
Or if it's a rugby game, you might want to put on a bit of weight, get a bit more bulked so that you're ready. So you don't just get flattened by the other side.
Yeah.
But I was thinking it leads to a different sort of competitions. Because obviously in football, there's the exchange season where they buy players from other teams and make all these deals to be like, oh, who can we get that's the best players? And there'd be some of that if you had a few professionals left. But if it was all public or partly public, you would try to actively recruit the fittest fans to your team.
Mm-hmm.
You try to get the ones that you have to be as match ready as possible.
Yes.
Which, yeah, as you said, could be a great way to motivate people to do some exercise. Or alternatively, you could take out adverts in the towns and cities of competing teams for unhealthy snacks, sedentary activities, you know, really like maybe like for smoking adverts, just to really try and make their athletes' performance as poor as possible, so that rather than you being better, they are worse.
You know what? That would absolutely happen because there's enough money. You know, unbridled capitalism would absolutely exert these pressures. Does any of that kind of sabotage happen in the sporting world already, or does everyone just assume I guess it would be quite difficult to like beam adverts for, you know, Domino's directly to your like opposing team, and you assume that they're impervious, their personal trainers and so on will see to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the public at large, much more amenable to those targeted Facebook ads or what have you.
Yeah, you're not just like sort of letter bombing their houses with Domino's pizza or like Big Macs just squeeze through.
just
I'm getting all this free food. I guess I'll just eat this food that's appeared randomly in front of me.
Like imagine a dark sponsorship. You got like the actual sponsor, like, you know, like you wear this jersey. Here's your Red Bull or whatever. And then you've got like, hey, you didn't contact us, but we're sponsoring you. Here's lard. Enjoy. It's all free.
And the sumo wrestler's like, excellent. This is exactly what I needed.
Oh, someone messes up the paperwork somewhere, and yeah, you don't want that. Well, look, I love the idea of bringing in untrained amateurs, because I think fundamentally a lot of this for me stems from the philosophy of nerfing athletes. Because they've gotten too strong, basically. If you've ever looked into, have we already talked about this, how back in the day, wasn't there a guy who rocked up for the Boston Marathon like in 1910 or something? And lost his shoes.
I think we have touched on this before, yeah.
There we go, we've already mentioned it. Basically, back in the day, being like at the pinnacle of human fitness was much easier, the bar was just much lower. Same way, as far as I can tell, I mean, dudes like Aristotle, I don't want to rag on Aristotle, I'm sure he was, you know, okay, but like, his job can't have been that hard. I'm pretty sure he was categorizing animals by color.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like one of the world's foremost experts on practically everything, because there was no need to specialize. You just, you know, like you read two books and you were already so far into the top percentile of geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
It was just much, much easier. And that used to be the case for sports as little as 100 years ago. But that means now we've had 100 years of really weird, hyper-specialized Olympics, and we've completely lost the old spirit whereby you had to be just a naked amateur.
Yeah.
Those are the only people allowed to compete, right? So bring it back. Maybe what, you can't...
Nakedness, or...
That's a side thing, I don't know. Maybe it makes it better somehow. I could go either way. But more importantly, I appreciate it's difficult to just have amateurs competing at the Olympics. There's too many factors at play. But you can make professional athletes into amateurs by refusing to tell them what they're going to be competing in until the day. Just make up new rules, right? Or like tweak the existing ones. Like, you've all trained with, championship standard basketballs. Well, here's the ball you're going to be playing with today. It's a bowling ball. Okay. Or, we've created a new sport and it's a combination of lacrosse and tightrope walking. So off you go. Game starts in 5.
So is the idea that everyone has to train in everything so that they are an all-rounder? So that you are ready for any eventuality.
That's how it would break down, I think. Yeah, it would tug us away from this sort of hyper-specialized, like, so what's your deal? Like, you run really good. It's like, oh, I don't run everything really good. I just run really fast for 10 seconds, you know? No, none of that. It's silly. Yeah, we want just all-round sports people, athletes, in the very generic sense. And yeah, you'd have to get really good at... The more creative they can be with inventing the sports, the better. I like the idea of some of them being based off of, like, playground games, like, designed by children, possibly. I always come back to how kids could do things better, basically. There's a lot of creativity there that could be tapped. Just a lot of stuff that involves bouncing tennis balls off of walls with your hands, variants of stuck in the mud, things that are confusing to the adult brain, fresh and new and difficult.
Right, and so all these athletes who are training, what would their, like, training gymnasium look like?
I assume that would be another complicating factor.
Just like a primary school. Like, they all go to school, really good, they sit actually on tiny chairs and have to climb ropes in the gym.
They have to really get into the spirit of it. It depends how far-reaching the variation is. Yeah, maybe they don't even tell them, like, what the Olympic stadium is going to look like. It gets built in secret.
This year, it's all underwater. You've got to get really good at diving.
That's exactly where I was going to go with it. Yeah, possibly. Training regimens that... Because they already try to game the system, like, okay, I'm going to train at altitude, because I know the altitude I'm going to be competing at. I'm going to, like, increase the resistance so that I'm ready. You'd be trying to do that, but with everything. Like, okay, this month I'm training in all the sports, like I usually do, except I'm going to make everything heavier, just in case they give me, like, a shot put made of titanium. And the next time I'm going to do it with everything that's lighter, just in case. And, just, like, really mix up those training schedules.
Mm. I do like the idea of everything being underwater, though. Like, maybe you'll give them, like masks with a tube up to the surface, so they've got an oxygen supply. But it's just, football's underwater, so everything is so slow. They're all having to wear, like, weighted shoes to keep them from, like, floating upwards. Like, long jump, it wouldn't even work at all, really. I don't know, javelin, because, like, just the resistance would make everything impossible,
which I think would be a really fun challenge for the commentators as well.
Hmm.
A part of me wants to have kindergarten children as the, like, referees and commentators as well, just for the fun factor, possibly as the coaches, I don't know. Just generally, there's a certain routine. I appreciate new things happen in sports all the time and records get broken and all the rest of it, but to a certain degree, you get used to what you expect to happen in a season. I assume. I don't watch any sports. but this would really mix it up. And yeah, imagine how difficult it's going to be. Like, the guys measuring the long jump, it's like, oh, this year it's underwater. Good luck with that. And they have to be like, okay, long jump underwater. I guess we tell them they're not allowed to, like, move their arms. Okay, what if we handcuff them? They have to have, like, that planning meeting without ever having trialed it. And just, on the day, see how it goes. It has all the fresh vibrancy of live theater. Like, this might be the night someone fluffs their lines. This might be the Olympics where we discover that underwater sports are stupid and everything gets cancelled. Nobody gets any medals. You don't know.
Yeah, I like the idea of a theme for the Olympics. Because I think maybe there is, like, a very subtle theme on the Olympics from year to year. I mean, I guess it's the country that it's based in. It's like, this year the theme is Tokyo. But I'd like to apply a more practical theme which has an impact on all of the events. So one idea I had was make everything triathlons. Because I like triathlons for a similar idea to what you touched on, is that you have to be a bit of an all-rounder. So, you know, you've got to be good at cycling, running, and swimming. Yeah. You can't just specialise in one. But, so if every sport now has to lead straight into another one, so, and then into another one after that. So I want to see people competing in, like, a four-hour tennis match, only to jump into a car for a Formula One race, and then it's time for a rugby match. Or you're, like, running and doing a pole vault onto a bike. And then you're doing like one of the velodrome races, and then you're holding you like snatch a javelin on the last lap, and then at the very end you have to throw it as far as possible, but like from the bike.
See how closely you can enmesh them. I love this. And try and combine sports that are as opposed to each other as possible, mm-hmm. because you can train and get. I'm sure triathlon training is super difficult, but like. To a degree, it's a lot of cardio and like being good with legs, you know, so you can run and swim and like, etc. But like, they already do this with, you know, about chess boxing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, they punch each other in the head and then they play a cerebral game and then they have to get back in the ring, you know, like, yeah, I want that level of opposition. Yeah, javelin, but from a bike. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I just like the idea of some of the transitions as well. Like, I don't know, you're skiing and you have to, like, you go down one of the ski jumps. Maybe mm-hmm. it's in the Winter Olympics. And then as you're mid-flight, you've got to detach your skis and land in the pair of ice skating boots. And then just start going.
Oh, gosh. I was thinking it was like an opposition of climate. So, like, you come off the ski jump, you're tearing off your super warm, like, winter clothes, your helmet and everything, and you land, and you're in your swimsuit, you land in the sweltering sand, it's time for beach volleyball.
Yeah, stuff like, or like, you've been swimming, and then you're playing beach volleyball, so you get absolutely covered in sand, it's really uncomfortable, and then maybe you're wrestling, so it's just, even more uncomfortable than that.
Proper endurance events. Yeah, that's another way to deal with the fact that athletes have just gotten too good. Increase the load by just... It's like super sets in weight training or whatever. Like, oh, normally you do a set, take a break, do another set. No. Now you do two sets before you get a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other idea, which would be a good theme for the Olympics, I think, or just any kind of sports, three-legged races are not done enough. That's something which is very much done in primary school, never done again, never relevant until you're a parent and you're doing it presumably as part of the, like, you know, mum and dad's event. But yeah, if you do that to every sport, I would watch football where all the players are connected to a teammate and they've got to, like, you know, who are your strikers? Well, we've got, it would help if I knew any footballers' names. I was going to say Gareth Southgate. Southgate, he's the manager. Anyway, for some reason he's playing. Southgate is connected to...
Make the managers play sometimes. I'm on board.
Yeah, that'd be great, actually. Maybe, the managers and all the support staff also rotate in as well.
Yes.
If you want to keep it professional, but not like full amateur. But anyway, like you've got football, where you're joined to another player. You could have Usain Bolt competing in a sprint while dragging his, like, not quite so fast co-athlete behind him.
Yes.
like swimming. Swimming would be quite interesting if you're joined by the leg. Not quite sure how that would work.
Or you could strap people back to back and they got to kind of synchronize dolphin style somehow turbine of whirling arms.
Yeah, you'd have to turbine so that the other person could breathe. You'd be literally spinning as you went along.
That's amazing. I want to see that now. Damn it. Why don't we have any power, Andy? I want to make this happen.
And the last idea that I had for this was wrestling, but you're literally joined to your opponent by the leg.
Yes. So good. And I can picture the controversy when, like, one year a set of conjoined twins, you know, joins and, like, nobody knows because they've, like, been clever with the way their, like, costume is stitched together. And then, oh, no, it turns out they've been training like this their whole life. That's not fair. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Incredible. Ah, just the mental image of the wrestling, just four people in a pile, or the swimmers just drilling through the water, this flailing limbs. That's very good. Okay, I've got one to add to that. How about It gets a little technological here because you can see, I was thinking like technology, one way that it helps is obviously you can compete in like you know, power armor and stuff, you know. But that's just kind of a different kind of Formula One. They're already like, let's put a person in a vehicle that goes fast and then they have to control the vehicle. That's a concept we have. You can have different vehicles, whatever. So not interesting enough. Okay, next, what about athletes are too good, competing against each other, whatever. What about competing against your past self is supposed to be like a good, healthy thing, right? Like, you know, I don't care about beating the other guy. I just want to be stronger than I was yesterday, sort of thing. So you compete against a robot that has been carefully fine-tuned to be exactly as good as you were last year.
Okay.
Or, better yet, you have a robot that is controlled. Here's where the insane, like, Frankensteinian chimera element comes in. The mech is controlled by two people. It's like a Quop situation. Did you ever play Quop? Or, like, Octodad?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Or Surgeon Simulator. There's all these games where the fact that the controls are terrible is the selling point. And
so, like, each person controls, like, one leg in this sprint or whatever.
Precisely, yeah. And it's just an absolute mess. And or somehow you might, because it's kind of on a spit, like one person to a leg is nice and easy, but I'm sure there's more complex ways to enmesh the controls here. I also like the idea somehow of giving primary control of the mech suit or of the robot or the hologram or whatever to a rank amateur, has no clue.
Right.
But they've been paired with a professional athlete in a similar way to like Strictly Come Dancing, where you've got the pro and then the amateur and they've got to teach them to dance. You get all the frustration and the drama. Similar deal, because they're now the it's like the co-pilot is the pro and they have to somehow coach this amateur through it. I just want to see a mech like shuddering with conflicting impulses and just, you know, the professional footballer just yelling down their headset at the idiot who is trying to score an own goal.
Yeah, this is just remind me of the fact that there was like a series on TV which was like Robot Olympics or like Robot Sports, and it was great. And I don't know what happened to that series, because it was like they took Robot Wars and like, robots fighting, not good enough. We want a vast array of sports like racing and swimming and stuff. And yeah, the best bits of it were when they were like clearly terrible robots. They were they were so badly designed for the task. And they would just shudder and fall over and like, or like inch across the finish line like 10 minutes after everyone else.
The absolute best, because what I particularly love, and I think it has to do with the, this must have been what the early Olympics was like, because it's about the amateur spirit. It hasn't gotten corporate and sponsored and everything yet. So people just do whatever. Like, I like pink fur. I'm going to cover my robot in pink fur. I remember a contestant in Robot Wars that was like that. And I'm like, fair enough, buddy. But the problem is, there's a bunch of robots out there with flamethrowers. You know? Like, don't make your thing flammable. That's like step one.
They got through a lot
of
pink fur.
Yeah. But some of them haven't, you know, decided. And I either saw the same one or a similar one at the Robot Olympics. And I remember one of the events was climbing a rope, like you do gym when you're like 10, right? And I remember this like carefully humanoid robot like bending its knees like springs, like boing boing, and just like very slowly inching up this thing. And then these other guys were just like, yeah, we put wheels on ours. And it just goes zip, 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 zip. It's literally just lapping everybody else by orders of magnitude. And it's like,
yeah, that makes sense.
Didn't put any limitations on the shape they could be, huh? Turns out legs aren't great.
Can I just touch back on, I've just thought of another one which would be good on a three-legged race.
Please.
You mentioned, like, motorized vehicles. So, like, you know, there's, like, MotoGP, which is motorbike racing? Imagine that, but you've got two people whose right and left legs are joined together.
It would be kind of like circus skills, right? Because you get people that do insane, you know, stand on the back of the motorbike and do flips type deals. It'd be
but
that
you'd
kind
of
skill set.
Like so careful, because you've both got to go exactly the same speed. Cornering would be so difficult, because the person on the inside's got to slow down more than the person on the outside, because they've got to go round. Oh,
and now
great.
It's a competitive sport with people actively trying to mess with you instead of a carefully choreographed routine with everyone collaborating.
Yeah.
Yeah, big fan.
Well, on that topic though, I was thinking for any sport, you could make it better by making it more like Mario Kart. So
yes,
I'm kind of thinking for any sport, the side or the players who are lower ranked or who are kind of performing poorly in the game, they get various upgrades to increase their chances of catching up. So in Mario Kart, if you're at the back, you get better power-ups so that you're more likely to reach the front again. Mm-hmm. So it would keep the games interesting because, you know, it's less like, oh, this team is just much better than the other one and they are clearly going to win. So it would lead to...
It's more fun for the family.
Yeah, it would be irritating for the really good teams because suddenly all these really bad people are just, like, beating them because they've got all these advantages.
But aren't sports about having fun at the end of the day? You know, shouldn't we bring that back? Like, the spirit of just everyone coming together to kick a ball around and have a good time?
I don't think that's what sports are about.
Well, they should be, dang it.
Beating the other people. but it could lead to interesting dynamics, though, because let's say your performance in the first half of the game kind of informs what power-ups you get in the second half of the game, or, you know, if you get an extra player, or you get, I don't know, like, if you're on bikes, you might get a faster bike, whatever. So the first half of the game or the race, you could try to be as rubbish as possible in the first half in order to get as many power-ups as possible for the second half. Which kind of already happens in a way with certain... there's a specific velodrome bike sport, I forget what it's called, but basically you're doing a certain number of laps, and because people don't want to tire themselves out for the end of the race, they get the incentive is at the beginning you go slower, but because everyone's got this incentive, everyone just goes really slowly for like the vast majority of the race, and it's just about everyone kind of like slowly going around this track, and then suddenly in like the last five laps everyone goes absolutely insane and just, you know, kills it for those last five laps. So it's kind of a pointless sport, I think, because the first 50 laps or whatever are pretty boring to watch, and then it all just happens at once.
It's,
you might
like
as well just do a sprint
when the actual race happens.
Yeah And it's kind of about, oh, when are they going to make a break for it and that sort of thing. But again, it's that thing of like, oh well, I'm not going to put in any effort at the beginning because there's no point because I'll be disadvantaged at the end.
Yes, but I think you want to keep it fresh, because that, to me, is the result of the rules having existed for long enough for people to figure out the optimal way of playing, right? Like in a video game, they would switch things up. They'd introduce new weapons or release new card packs or whatever to switch up the meta. But in sports, it settles tremendously over time. So yeah, I think that's a great idea. I want a situation where... I've got a buddy who does martial arts, and like tactically determining which weight class you want to place in when you compete is a thing, because like you can gain, if you're like kind of on the edge, then you can be like, okay, I can either try and lose a bit of weight and then be at the upper end of this weight class, and then like I know how much the other guys are going to weigh, or I can try and gain a bit of weight and then I'll be, you know, tackling guys of this difficulty. Mm-hmm. And I want that, but like not a considered decision, you know, years in the making or you have a ton of experience. No, you get introduced to the catch-up mechanics like new and fresh, and you've got to be like, okay, I guess if we slow down a little bit, they give us a bunch of banana skins, I think they said. So that might be good. I don't know. Is that better than the oil slick? Let's find out.
All these footballers doing slide tackles on this oil slick and just going absolutely miles.
I remember seeing it was sent around as a meme. I hope it's real. I want it to be real. It had a photo, so it has to be real. It was like a Winter Olympics of I don't know what year, where Australia got their first gold medal ever. Mm-hmm. Because I think it was like ice skating race of some kind. Literally everybody fell over. The Australian dude was coming in dead last, and then there was some kind of mass pile up. And that's amazing. Exactly what I want to see. I want a situation where like the Australian dude is skimming around that rink, except his arms are laden with like water balloons and like whatever the heck else he's allowed to like throw or activate.
He's got little blow torches just about holes in the ice behind him.
Yeah, exactly. Or I don't know, maybe you'd be like granted like little clickers to activate like traps in the track that are already there. I don't know how you do it exactly, but they can figure it out. They're smart people.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking, to kind of actually go back to my theme of themes for sports. Ooh. My last one I had for this was hurdles. So why did they invent hurdles in the first place? Like, running is too easy. Let's add some barriers to that. But then they just stopped it running. Why did they stop it running? Why not add barriers to other sports? So cycling events would be much more exciting if you got to, like, do some sweet bunny hops along the way. Or, like, hurdles in swimming where you've got to, like, dive out of the water and over low bars like a dolphin.
Interesting.
Like, bowling, if you had hurdles. I'm not sure quite how that would work. Maybe if there were little ramps in the bowling alley.
Maybe you could somehow add obstacles to the... But because it kind of turns into a sort of crazy golf if you start adding ramps and things to the actual alley. Yeah. But in the run-up before you let go of the ball, maybe you have to go through some... I'm picturing almost, you know, the Japanese, like, human Tetris game show with, like, the thing moving towards you and you've got to make a shape to, like, figure some sort of contortion you have to go through before you let fly, I think would work quite well.
Yeah, or you can, like... You've got to sort of, like, bowl the ball through various tubes and, like, catch it again as you're running along in order to, like, get power up. I don't know. Get a boost.
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's another one you could somehow combine with something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some kind of... why don't we make contact juggling, a competitive sport or something? You have to go through this gymnastic routine handling your bowling ball and then eventually let fly and see how many pins you can knock down.
Yeah.
And you're ranked on, like, smoothness.
My favourite hurdles one, though, was actually my wife's idea, so thank you, Flora. But this one is bobsled. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously everyone runs along and then, like, goes down that big ice tube, but you're sort of, like, sat in this thing. So, like, bobsled, so you're going, like, I don't know, many, many miles an hour, but you've got to, like, jump over the hurdle as the bobsled goes underneath it. And, like, land back in the bobsled
and
keep going.
That's proper wacky racers level shenanigans, and I'm here for it. Big fan. All right, look, I started overthinking this, but I started thinking about, like, what is sports? What have we got? And I kind of broke them down into three main categories, and I've probably forgotten a bunch of others, but I feel like sports are either A, hitting balls into target areas using either body parts or, like, primitive tools. You know, sticks or whatever. That's your golf, your football, you get a ball, you put it over there, basically.
Yeah.
Or you get straightforward, just like feats of athleticism, you know, run fast, swim fast, lift the heavy thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of going to count, like, driving there because it's like reaction times and stuff. You're either controlling your human flesh suit or, you know, this machine you're in. And then lastly, you get all this simulated combat stuff. And obviously martial arts and whatnot, but also, like, archery, fencing, and, like, tossing a javelin, you know, etc. I'm pretty sure that's all sports. I can't think of anything that doesn't fit into that. Nobody correct me. But I was thinking, can we just, like, flip them, basically? Maybe we've been doing it all one way for too long. So what if there are intricate systems set up to direct the balls to a certain place and you have to fight against them?
I see. So so it's like it's not that you're against a team and they're trying to put the ball in your goal. It's that a system that you're combating is trying to put the ball in your goal.
I guess in my head it just kind of turns into Total Wipeout or possibly like giant crazy golf. Maybe like human-sized versions of these like silly games that aren't real sports, like foosball or table football, but like with human players. Is that a thing people do? Have a weird dream?
Strap people to giant poles and, play table football with them.
I had a fever dream where that was a type of, you know, like chair football where you sit on a chair or like the kind with a giant inflatable ball that you roll around. Oh, is that not a thing?
Maybe it is where you're actually standing on the ground. You're not like suspended on the bar. But,
where you have to like stay in place, maybe.
And you've got to be like, if you want to move left, you've got to convince the other three guys on your pole to move left at the same time.
Yeah, maybe something like that. I'm getting confused with my original idea, but the original idea was bad anyway, so it doesn't matter. Let's move on. Next up, simulated combat. I was like, there's a lot of aggression there. What if instead we had competitive, like, nurturing skills?
Mm-hmm.
Like gardening or massage or flower arranging. And then I realized that I'm pretty sure like samurais used to compete in flower arranging and stuff. And I know there are massage competitions because Fedra's doing a massage course and they have competitions. So
she's doing a massage competition.
Not yet. Maybe one day. So I guess those already exist, but I'd like to see more of them. But I guess maybe the most interesting one is so straightforward athletics is like we just need to go fast. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about placing obstacles in the way, hurdles and all the rest of it, but not active sabotage by the other team, because there isn't another team normally. There's just other people trying to run fast.
Mm-hmm.
You have another team for moving the ball around. But in, for example, you get it in video games where there's like an asymmetry, like in Left 4 Dead, you either play the survivors trying to make it to the end of the level or the infected who have to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe like creative sabotage is an untapped type of sport that can be broadly applied.
I mean, I would say that that does already exist in the form of like cricket or baseball, where, you know, there is an asymmetry. You know, you do swap sides in the game, but like one team is trying to hit the ball out and as far as possible and then get as many runs as possible. The other team is trying to catch them or like stop them getting runs.
That's true, but this is once again like a move the ball around type of sport with teams. So yeah, you're right. Anywhere where we've got teams competing, sabotage is very much baked in. But for example, in Formula One, you're all pointed in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
There's no scope for anyone to sabotage you. You just got to go faster than them, beat them on the turns and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what if it was like, okay, it's your turn to race, but we have given your opponents 2 hours to mess with the course before you're allowed on it, you know? Uh-huh. And then tomorrow you get to do the same to them. It's going to be a Home Alone type situation. There's going to be marbles all over the place. You're going to have to figure it out.
There's a lot of deaths, but we think it makes great telly.
I guess you'd run into a certain amount of danger, yeah. But I don't know. Maybe you might get more... less deadly, more comedic results from like long jump, but you're allowed to take it in turns to sabotage each other. So it becomes
fill the pit with spikes.
Maybe not to mess with the environment, but like you're allowed to just attempt to tackle the person. They have to get as far as they can, but you're allowed to try and physically stop them.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Or like you can sort of in the sport you can mess with their gear that they use beforehand. Like, you can make one substitution, and the other team have a chance to, like, try and figure out what you've done, but they only have, like, 10 minutes to do that. So, like, you could have given them shoes in football where the spikes retract. So, whereas they had great grip, the spikes retract, they're sliding all over the place.
Yeah.
But it's only if they spot that beforehand, then go, aha, you've messed with my boots, then they go, okay, fair cop. But if not, they've just got to go with it.
They're not allowed to replace them, like, call a timeout. No. Yeah, that's great. It becomes a combination of that Japanese game show where something in the room is made of chocolate and you've got to find it in time. Yeah, that's a good one. You could even, you could layer elements of sabotage. Like, they've done one thing to mess with your equipment. You have 10 minutes to find it. Like, oh, mm-hmm. No, okay, guess you're going out into the field with what you've got. They've also had 10 minutes to mess with your side of the field. Oh, what is it? Oh, you don't know. Turns out, you know, the sprinklers have been left in. Oh, they're turning on halfway through the match. You're getting soaked.
Oh, sorry, buddy. I had a great combo with that, which I just thought of. Would be you replace all their kit with like water soluble fibers.
So
if it's like maybe the sprinklers turn on or it starts raining and their kit just dissolves. and so they've got to like make a decision like, right, do we keep going? If we do keep going, how do we tell who's who from a distance? Because there's no numbers anymore.
Everyone's just equally naked or covered in like a weird sludge.
It's like a very extreme form of like the shirts on, shirts off team. From when we used to, you know, when you play football in the park.
Yep. No, I like that. That's very good. Yeah, maybe you could combine kind of the escape room, like Fast and Furious, find the clue sort of mania. And, you know, rig up some cameras in the, like, changing rooms and stuff. That sounds really creepy, but you know what I mean. Like, somehow make that accessible to the spectators. But yeah, like, the mania of, like, trying to figure it out. Or, like, they used to do with Scrap Heap Challenge, where it's like, go, 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 you got to build a, you know, build a...
Build your own rowing boat and then and then race in it, yeah.
And then you got the race element. Exactly, yeah, like the panic, and then the competition. I think that's a strong formula.
Yeah. I also just thought, what if, because you're talking about, like, subverting common theme, common sports kind of trends. So you could have it where it's always team on team or individual on individual. What if it's team on individual? So
David and Goliath style. Wait, yeah, what? Like, no, just Goliath versus the opposing army style.
I guess so, yeah. Like, so it's a bit like Piggy in the Middle or something in football, where, you know, you've got to intercept the ball as people just pass it between themselves, but it's just one guy.
just I don't bullying know how you, the sport.
Kind of, yeah. I don't know how you'd apply that, like, what you could make it so that it was fair to have a team of people against one person.
Well, I think we've either danced around this or talked about it directly, where it would be fun to just have a pro versus a bunch of worthless amateurs.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
And it would give... I think I've already seen memes that are like, petition to have every future Olympics have just one amateur competing alongside the pros, just as a point of comparison, one normal human being, so we know how fast they're actually going.
Yeah.
But even more fun in... yeah, like running, okay, you just got this one, like, wheezing, like, smoker miles behind everybody else. Fine, that's funny. But even better in a situation like, you know, basketball, where, like, the single pro is... you know, like a meter taller than everybody else.
Uh-huh. And actually just knows how to dribble. Bouncing it around all of them.
Yeah, that'd be great to watch.
Yeah. My last idea was Animalympics. So you get various creatures from different countries and they compete on all the usual Olympic sports that they can feasibly do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the animal has to come from the country which is submitting it. And it is, you know, it's literally been taken from that country and they've gone, this is our athlete. So suddenly countries begin to care a lot more about their biodiversity because they need to preserve their stock of athletes. You know, if you've only got three pandas, you've got three pandas to choose from in the climbing competition. I don't know.
Pandas aren't particularly good at anything if the internet gifts or anything to go
Yeah, that's
by.
True. Okay, let's say gazelle for relaxing. Sprint or whatever. Or like high jump, you know, you want gazelle. So if you only got three, they're not going to do well. You want a plentiful stock.
Yeah.
So rewilding gets a big boost. You know, England famously doesn't have much biodiversity because we've killed it all with industry and, you know, centuries of neglect. So you might be like, we need to get, you know, we need to get more of our original megafauna back so that we can compete in these events.
We need those bears.
But then maybe invasive species become an issue because every country then tries to establish, like, breeding populations of elephants for the wrestling or gazelle for the high jump.
You'd quickly, like, pick the best animal at each thing and then be like, God damn it, I know we're in Alaska, but we need giraffes. They're the only ones who have a hope at... Okay, I don't know what giraffes would be good at.
They'd be good at...
something where you have to reach up tall. I don't know.
Long jump. Pole vault. They just use the necks.
They could flip over somehow. I don't know.
You could train them. It'd be fine.
Yeah.
That's
a great idea. Okay, I love it because my final idea also involved getting all of the energy that goes into. So I want to talk for a second about a rat, a very special rat. Mm-hmm. We've got pet rats, as you know, and they are kind of smart, kind of not. And they, to be fair, I don't think this is an intelligence thing. I think it's just the way they're wired. We suspect, without having done any research, maybe you know. That they get an energy boost when they're hungry or when they think food is near.
Okay.
Because they become like nonsensically erratic when when feeding time approaches.
Right.
Obviously, animals get very excited when it's dinner time, and that's understandable. You know, your dog will start hanging out near the kitchen or near their food bowl or just watching you intently to see when you go for it sort of thing. Mm-hmm. These rats are climbing all around the cage, and there's three of them, so they will they climb the bars like little monkeys, and they will be like, oh, maybe if I go to this corner the human will pay attention, and then the other rats will be like, he's going to that corner, there must be food, and they will follow him and then reach the corner and just smush him, and then there will be like a squeaking tussle, and then they'll be like, no food in this corner, all right, back to the other corner. And they will do this for as long as you let them and until you feed them. And one of them keeps breaking away from the pack to jump, hop, hop, hop into this running wheel and then run and then stop and then hop, 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 jump back on the bars and continue. And either he thinks running on the wheel is going to generate treats or our suspicion is he's trying to burn off just, you know, the fire within prompted by the knowledge that food is close. He's just, you know, full of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And applying that to a broader society, human population, we pour a lot of energy and effort into sports, which have some benefits. People enjoy them, physical health, you know, social cohesion to a degree, yada yada. Mm-hmm. But also in a very real sense, a lot of that energy is wasted because it doesn't matter where the ball goes. You're going to put it in a box at the end of the match and take it home, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what if we harness that energy for a noble purpose and, for example, have competitive beach cleaning competitions or, you know, or... I couldn't actually think of very many more, except I was interested in building the... Because sometimes building the Olympic stadium turns out to be like a huge boondoggle. It like bankrupts a country, or like it turns out they're using like borderline slave labor and it's a terrible civil rights issue and it makes them international. You know what? And it's just a bummer, basically. So why not make the athletes build it as a sport?
Right, okay. Yeah, a really long sport that is the preview to the actual Olympics.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have to be super long because you'd compress it as much as possible. Have you seen Parks and Recreation?
No.
Okay, I'm going to make an obscure reference. It doesn't matter to anybody.
Okay.
this is a few years ago. Maybe some people have seen it. It's a popular sitcom. Anyway, they have... there's one episode where they join this program... called Kablam, and they build parks, or they build like children's playgrounds in parks, and it's so annoying. Like the Kablam guy comes round and he's got his headset and his megaphone and his t-shirt that says like Kablam and a big like pop art logo, and he's all like, is everybody ready to Kablam today? 1, 2, 3, Kablam it. You just need the Kablam spirit, you know. And they're like, okay, so we're going to build this park in like one day. And he's like, yeah, you just got to kablam it. And they're like, okay, but what about all these like problems and setbacks? And he's like, that's not the right attitude. You see a problem and you just kablam it. So it turns out, spoiler alert for anybody who's halfway through the episode as we speak, it turns out there is no such organization. He's just an eccentric billionaire who takes a day off every couple of months to just like, fool a town into building a park, like a kind of a flash mob thing.
Right.
And I think we could fool a load of like very fit, healthy people into building a giant stadium very quickly.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure it's a foolproof plan.
Well, you'd make it competitive somehow. You'd have judges, you know, like expert construction workers and architects and stuff. I'm not expecting to come out of it with a perfect stadium, but the process isn't perfect as it is.
Are they all using their like their athletic specialisms to build the stadium? So like, are they like transporting materials downriver, just like pulled by shoals of swimmers? And you know, they've got to put the kind of joining bolts in, so the javelin throwers line up and they throw these enormous bolts through and they latch them together. The discus, I don't know what their purpose would be, but yeah.
We'd find one. Yes, 100%. It is like the end of the family movie where it turns out there was no reason to fight all along. You guys were competing. You just needed to bring your skills together. And the true, you know, treasure was the friends you made along the way. And they all just perfectly synchronize.
Or it's like a Marvel film, you know, the end bit where they're fighting off hordes of things, except they're all using their specialist superpowers to build this stadium.
100%. Yeah. And similarly, I don't think a lot of thought needs to go into it. It just works out in the end, like the incredible imbalance of powers in the X-Men or whatever. It doesn't matter. Just give them all cool jumpsuits and let them loose.
Yeah. Like the workers who've lost their jobs because they've been replaced by Olympians are just like sadly looking on as all the weightlifters just like lift up an just entire like iron girder, just like two of them, and like just calmly walk in.
Yep. Well, you flip it and then you let the construction workers compete in the stadium afterwards.
Brilliant. they'd love that. And they get all the sponsorship deals as well. And all the Olympians are on minimum wage.
Yeah, it cranks us back to a previous idea where you just have to rotate jobs every month. a fairer society for all.
Adriano, we're doing another segment which we know and love, and I'm sure the listeners are delighted to have return. It is Hyperfakeicals. This week's edition is the title which you came up with, all credit to Adriano for this
one. So proud.
Is Docu-Make-Believe, because we're doing it about documentaries. So for anyone who doesn't know, the basic premise of Hyperfakeicals is we each take lists of things, in this case documentaries. One or two of them are fake, we've made up, and the rest are real, and we have to, first of all, make up what we think they might be about, and second of all, guess which one is indeed fake. So yeah, we'll see how it goes, I guess. We've kind of both got quite good at guessing what each other's are, so we'll
see.
Too good,
I would say.
Yeah, we'll see if that trend continues this time. But
let's see.
Yeah, fingers crossed that we might actually fool each other a little bit this time.
I hope so.
Do you want to kick it off?
Certainly do. I've got two fakes for you, so I'm going to be splitting mine.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you a list of four.
Mm-hmm.
One of these is fake.
Okay.
And so I'm going to give you a title and a release year, and you're going to tell me what it's about.
Okay.
So we have A Dog's Day in Court, 2002.
2002, okay. I guess this would be about a dog who gets appointed to the New York bar. Bark, yes.
There it is.
And this sounds more like a movie, but anyway.
He passed the bark exam or whatever would be the tagline.
He did. Somehow he becomes a lawyer because they made it multiple choice for him and he just barked the right letters. You know, is it A, B, C, or D? And he barks three times. C is correct. And so he got through, and it's him and his first client, and they're both really nervous. And it's basically about how the client who's on trial for murder gets off because they just found the dog so cute and were really distracted from all the evidence, of which there were piles.
And the client's a cat.
Yeah.
So they also have to get over that, you know, there's like a racism element.
Uh-huh.
We all learn a valuable lesson. Yeah. Fantastic, got it in one.
And
obviously.
The dog wears one of those little wigs, even though they don't wear them in America.
But the dog, it was so excited, and nobody, you know, could bear to disappoint
him. Yeah.
Absolutely. What type of dog is it in your mind? In my mind, it's a golden retriever.
Oh, that's a good one. I was thinking, I was thinking a Labrador, fairly similar, yeah.
Okay, yeah, similar deal. All right. but now that I think about it, a Chihuahua would also be good as well. They're just like so angry. You know, the objection would be...
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, we can talk about dog breeds for a while. we'll find out later which one it actually was. All right. Second one, Perfect Bid, 2019.
Perfect Bid. I'm guessing it's about auctions, is what I would immediately think. What would it be on, though? I guess it would be about, like, someone who is just really obsessed, like, almost like a billionaire, eccentric millionaire or billionaire, who's, like, obsessed with auctions, and, like, maybe he moves into a town and just starts, like, outbidding everyone for literally everything, like, stuff he doesn't need or want, like, just random stuff. And so, like, it starts off with the town's inhabitants being really frustrated because all the stuff that they want is just going to this guy like an endless black hole, like, just he absorbs it all. But then it maybe...
He's just starting auctions, like, where there isn't even one. He just shows up at a yard sale with his paddle and just starts buying everything out of people's hands.
Yeah, it's just, like, how he, like, abuses his power to be like, I'll bid you this much for, you know, your dog.
Or
yeah. And just, like, people start, like, going along with it until they start, like, just submitting random things that they don't want. Like, they just, like, it's like a town-wide yard sale and he is buying everything from them, and so he makes this whole town rich, and it's the sort of weird dynamic that happens there.
And we learn about trickle-down economics and how the wealthy can really help us prosper.
And yeah, and how trickle-down economics definitely works. It is a great, great thing.
Wonderful.
Sponsored by Ronald Reagan.
Yes. Still kicking. Brilliant. Okay, yes. Next we've got The Act of Seeing with One's Own Eyes from 1971.
Okay, 1971. Oh, it's probably going to be really weird if this is a real one. anything made then, it's just like, all bets are off. it's about an optician who, it's an optician who gets blinded, and so obviously, you know, he loses his sight, but also his profession, and he starts to enter the occult and becomes more sort of spiritual, and it's about his awakening spirituality although he's lost his sight, he sees more of the world around him and all the different complexities which he'd missed before because he was so driven by his profession.
Blinded in a different way.
Yeah.
I love it. Very good. All right.
He was probably on mushrooms as well at the time because it was the 70s.
As was the director of the film. Yeah. It's a whole thing. Wonderful. Okay. Good job. Last one for this lot. It is simply The Wolf Pack, 2015.
The Wolf Pack.
Mm.
This is one of those ones where it's almost too on the nose. It's too easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could very easily say it's about wolves and they live in a pack and a guy goes and studies the pack. But I'm not going to do that. It's
not you. You're a professional.
It's about the band Wolfpack, which I think is a band.
Ooh, I'm prepared to believe it.
And they, I think they're known for being like really, I didn't know that's Rammstein. I don't know. Are they known for being really loud or is that someone else? Anyway.
Why not? Go for it.
It's about them and they are, just hanging out as a band and it's about all the trials and tribulations. It's a standard documentary about a band, and it's fairly bland.
All right. A bland documentary about a band.
Yeah.
A bland band. All right. Nice.
Okay. So is this a bit where you tell me what they actually, the synopses are?
I forget the order in which we do things every damn time, but that sounds about right. Let's go for it.
Okay.
Okay. So as ever, this is kind of chopped together and paraphrased from like Wikipedia and IMDb and whatever. And obviously one of them is made up. So spot which one that is. So we're starting with A Dog's Day in Court. So, as late as the early 20th century, animals were taken to court across Europe and the US for destroying crops. I didn't know this, but for destroying crops, killing farmers, or even in one chimpanzee's case, smoking a cigarette in public. okay. So, isn't that great? I'm learning all the time on this program.
Mm-hmm.
A Dog's Day in Court, set in 1921 San Francisco, covers the high-profile trial of a dog who risked the death penalty for killing 14 cats.
Right. Okay.
I know, right? Dark stuff. Yeah. So that is A Dog's Day in Court.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Perfect Bid. This one is about a super fan of the game show The Price is Right, who spent a lifetime analyzing retail price tags in case he was ever called up from the studio audience.
Wow.
And apparently the film explores how he became adept at recording and memorizing the prices of products featured on the show since its debut in 1972, and it culminates in him helping a contestant place a perfect bid, which ends in one of the biggest controversies in game show history, because I guess that's unusual.
Oh, I bet that's good. I hope that's real. That sounds like it's real. I think that one probably is.
All right, we'll see. I can neither confirm nor deny, but I will tell you that the act of seeing with one's own eyes, is described as one of the most direct confrontations with death ever recorded on film.
Oh, brilliant. Good.
Yeah, buckle in. This documentary is a non-narrative audio-visual document of the lifeless human body.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally zooming in on the dead bodies in a morgue, the film also covers the extraction of organs from the body during autopsy. Its focus on the carnal body devoid of any human significance makes an abstract statement on the futile process of life and death.
I don't like that one.
Well, maybe you don't have to watch it, because maybe it isn't real. If it is real, you do have to watch it. If it's not real, you have to make it. Those are the rules. I don't make them. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Finally,
finish off with Wolfpack.
We have the Wolfpack. Confined to their apartment in a Manhattan housing project for 14 years by parents terrified of the world outside their door, these seven siblings developed an understanding about life through movies. And the Wolfpack depicts their attempts to cope with reality after finally emerging from their involuntary exile.
Ooh, these are good.
Thank you.
I mean, so apart from the third one, that one's horrifying. But the others sound interesting.
Could be really interesting, you don't know. Maybe you're supposed to watch it on shrooms. Maybe that makes it better. I don't think so.
I think that would make it much worse.
Yeah, that is a danger of making that a very bad trip, actually.
Wow, okay. So we've got, dog being tried for murder.
Correct.
We've got, what's the second one?
Price is Right.
Price is Right guy. Yeah, the death one.
Correct. And the seven siblings confined to a house for 14 years finally emerge.
I'm going to say a dog staying caught is the fake.
Oh, you're too good.
Yeah.
God damn it. That's not fair.
The streak continues. Let's see if it can be broken in your second round.
What gave it away? Because the story is real.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there isn't a documentary about it, but I found a newspaper story from 1921.
I think it was the fact that you used the phrase set in, as in it was set in 1921, rather than, you know, because otherwise they'd have observed it. And also, it's like, how many documentaries were they making in 1921? Probably not that many.
Well, it was made in 2002 and about
I see.
That was the idea. Gosh dang it. Foiled by my poor writing. But if any listeners do want to look it up, fascinating story. The dog was called Dormy. That is like Dormouse, but it ends in IE. Mm-hmm. And he was like, it was like the dog escaped and killed a bunch of neighborhood cats, and that was illegal and could result in the dog being put down. But also, like, the dog's owner was held responsible, and there was a whole political thing where, like, he was a used car salesman that nobody liked or something, so they really wanted to kill his dog. Yeah, the dog sold a lot of really bad cars. He was dishonest, and honestly, yeah, this comeuppance was a long time coming. Anyway, it was an interesting newspaper article, so, people can Google it if they like.
Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by the other ones as well, though, especially the last one.
The Wolfpack, yeah, I know, right? Wild. Gosh. God. Yeah. Imagine the picture of the world you would build up through movies. I'm really curious about how it would go in real life, because I feel like I've seen various fictional settings where, like, you're kept in the apocalyptic bunker watching old, you know, films and building up a picture of humanity, and you're told, like, there's nothing out there but wasteland, and then, you know, it turns out there are other things out there besides wasteland, but people are never as psychologically messed up as I expect they would be in that kind of scenario, and I wonder.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Shall I do some of mine?
Please.
Okay, so yeah, I've only got five, so I'm going to do them all in one blast, and there's one fake in here.
One
fake.
So,
a bit harder for you.
I'm ready.
Okay, first up, I don't have years on mine. Sorry, I didn't realise.
That's okay, the years are senseless. I don't know why I read them out. There's no need.
Okay, the first one is called Under the Surface.
Mm. Oh my goodness. Okay, I just... it's all mermaids in my head immediately. okay, Under the Surface... Yeah. In my mind, it's one of these, like, searching for Bigfoot type dealios.
Mm-hmm.
It's about... but I think the differentiating factor... I would love to be utter confusion. Because normally I feel like they focus on... I haven't seen many, like, cryptid-based TV shows, to be fair, so I could be wrong. But I feel like they normally focus on... like a very well-established one, like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about, like, here's all the different views people have, and we'll interview a few people and so on. Or they're like, this specific guy has been trying to find aliens in this specific piece of woodland for the last 20 years. Let's go find out what his deal is, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And you get his perspective. Under the Surface is a generic enough title that I want it to seem focused to begin with. Like, you're talking about this team of, you know, determined amateurs who are convinced they've seen evidence of mermaids in this lagoon, but you gradually just drift into, like, other stuff that people think lives beneath the waves. Now it's about newt people, and then this other person thinks the moon landing was actually filmed in the Marianas Trench, and, you know, it covers all the bases. Everything people believe about what's going on under the water, that's what it's about. Just very wide-ranging.
Exciting. Yeah, I'd watch that.
I would too, actually. I feel like I'd learn a lot.
Yeah. It would be good filming in the Marianas Trench as well.
Oh, yeah.
Be a challenge. Well, no,
the irony is they film the scenes in the trench on the moon.
The documentary itself is faked on the moon. God.
It just levels. How deep does the conspiracy go?
Okay, second one for you is called Married to the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, man. Okay. I think I know what this is actually about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go in a different direction. I think this is about people who marry buildings, because I've heard of this phenomenon and I think it's fantastic. I'm going to go a different way. So have you seen Finding Neverland, I think, got adapted into a stage musical. Have you seen it?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Okay, great. I haven't either, but I have listened to some of the songs on Spotify. And it seems like it follows the theme of, like, visionary... It's always a visionary man who is like, I got to pursue my dream of making this, you know, stage play about Peter Pan or whatever. And everyone thinks I'm crazy and it's never going to work, but I got to do it. I got stars in my eyes. And, you know, the long-suffering wife who is just like, please, you're tearing this family apart. Just, you know, get a real job or what. You know what I mean? Like, it's always, you got to choose between, like, your head's always in the clouds. You got to choose between your dream or the people you care about, sort of thing. I'm getting lost. What was the title again?
It's Married to the Eiffel Tower.
Thank you. Okay, yes. I want it to be, yeah, about the guy who, Monsieur Eiffel, I assume, who planned and built the Eiffel Tower. I want it to be how, like, it was his crazy dream to make this big iron triangle, and all his loved ones were like, no, you can't, it's too tall, it's stupid, I don't like it. Apparently the French didn't like, did you know this? The French hated the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was built for, like, one of these, like, grand exposition, you know, like
the World Fair or whatever it was.
Exactly. One of these dealios, you know, like, the wonders of the modern age, like, constructions built entirely of iron, straight up to the clouds, this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, ah, oh, it's ugly, it's gaudy, it's so modern, where's all the curly stone bits? Don't like it. Tear it down once the exhibition's done. And it was supposed to have a shelf life, like the London Eye. It was meant to last 5 years or whatever, and then, like, tear it down. But then they were like, you know what, it's kind of cool, leave it. And now, can't get enough. Every Hollywood film, always a view of the Eiffel Tower.
Regardless of where it's set, from New York, Eiffel Tower.
Yes, exactly. Berlin, Eiffel Tower, yeah, why not? So anyway, yeah, it's about this guy and how, like, his wife divorces him because he's too obsessed with his building project, and in order to prevent the project getting cancelled, like, for legal reasons, so that the fair can go on, he actually has to marry it.
Right.
Like, for tax purposes.
And because then, if they try to take it down, it's murder.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, like, get them embroiled in the paperwork just long enough for the World Fair to come and go. And yeah. And there's a lovely ceremony, like, on top of the tower.
Biggest dress you've ever seen.
So, yeah, just incredible. The train actually covers, like, most of Paris.
It goes out to Versailles. It's really long.
Yeah.
Okay, next one then. It's called A Call from Joy Bubbles.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
That's it.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, great. Where this goes in my head is there's a type of surreal meme. That involves, goodness, like, mystical, like mystical artwork of, like, portals opening and, like, people emerging from, you know, from like, wrens in space or, like, behind planets or whatever. But the caption is like, hello, we've been trying to reach you about your car's extended warranty or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And the gag is just, like, how persistent some of these businesses or scammers are in trying to get in touch with you. And I like the idea that Joy Bubbles is a completely happy, chirpy, innocuous, like, after-school club for kids or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a completely, you know, like, you can be like, ah, insurance is a scam. God, those guys are just out to make money or whatever. But, like, Joy Bubbles is just trying to make kids happy, but they won't stop. Like, you get, like, the, you know, the slightly frazzled mother of three, like, gets the call the first time. She's like, sorry, I gotta wash their gym uniforms before. I don't have time to talk. I'm sorry. I'm not interested. And they're like, okay, that's fine. Have a joyful day. And then, yeah, you know, put the phone a click. But then they call again later that evening. And, you know, and she's like, I already said. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll make a note. We're real sorry about that. Have a joyful night. Bye-bye. And then, and they keep calling. And then she starts getting the call to, like, numbers that they shouldn't have. But, like, they know that, you know, they phone the phone box outside her house. But they know it's her when she answers. And then eventually she's getting messages, like, you know, hamburgers. And it's just the inescapability of Joy Bubbles.
It's like a multi-level marketing scheme, but the thing they're marketing is like joy for kids.
It's never properly explained what the product is.
No.
Yeah, very good. The more surreal, the better.
Okay, next one is called The Ghost Trains of Old England.
Oh. Okay, well, that sounds like another cryptid dealio where they just talk about like haunted trains. So that's cool, but it's got to be a twist to it. Ghost Trains of Old England. So I'm thinking maybe instead of it being about haunted trains, it's about trains that are ghosts.
Right.
So it's a deep exploration of... now, wasn't there... God, am I making... Is this a nightmare I had? Am I making up internet memes again? I think I remember reading about a really dark episode or book. I think it might have been a book of Thomas the Tank Engine that was about like trains getting scrapped.
Have we talked about this before as well, where one of them gets walled in?
Yes. Yes, we have.
Yes.
Thank you for reminding me. Okay, good. Turns out there's only a dozen things in the world. We just cycle through them. Bees, sports, transport, and trains getting walled up alive. Okay. Great. That was real good. Yes. Okay. So ghost trains. Yes. It's about people who have cracked the code and figured out how to communicate with ghosts, but exclusively train ghosts. And it's a deep dive into the horrible ways in which trains have been essentially put to death over the centuries.
Right.
'Cause nobody cared. Like, yeah, these ones were just left to rust slowly in the rain. Like, these ones were taken apart and cobbled onto other trains. Oh, it's Frankensteinian horror, you know, etc. Various, you know, ambiguous seances with their alleged ghosts that communicate mainly through whistles and sort of chuffing noises. And the elaborate narratives.
Like the flags or whatever in old train stations which go up when there's a train coming.
Yeah, they're like looking at the smoke off the incense or whatever, and yeah, look, look, the way it curls here, that's like semaphore, and just like, yeah, okay, I kind of see it, I guess. And then, you know, talking about how like how mean their conductor was and how they never got enough coal, etc.
Excellent. Okay, and the last one is The Art of Walking into Doors.
That's too good. That is, I wonder at what point I would get bored of a film that was just clips of people walking into doors, because I feel like you could mix it up. There's so many ways. There's like someone's holding the door open for you, and then just as you start to walk through it, like you turn your head because someone calls your name, but then they let go of the door and you don't notice. Or there's like the automatic door opens, but you misjudged which side was opening and you walked into the glass.
Yeah,
and
or like it's a push-pull mechanism and you did the wrong one.
Yeah, or just the door's too clean, you think there's nothing there, and then it was a, you know... And sometimes it would be people trying to push on doors which turn out to be already open, you know, they think it's glass and it is and they fall through. Like, there's so much variance, so...
Mm.
Gosh, maybe it is just that. Just like a compilation of...
Yeah, 5-hour loop.
Either that or like a fast... Like sometimes you get documentaries about people with unusual illnesses or disabilities or conditions. And maybe someone just has like a perfect storm. Like you get people with face blindness and it makes like reading expressions very difficult. But this one is somehow, like, why would it apply only to doors? And yet somehow there's some perfect storm of, like, sight impairments and psychological factors that come together to just make it really difficult for a person to interact with doors. And so you just get a view into the struggles of their daily life and the special gadgets that they've had to employ. And now they have a service dog who figures out doors for them, so you know it's got like a happy ending to it. But before that, they had to like poke every door they come across with like a spring on the end of a stick, just to, you know, etc.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so shall I give you some synopses of these?
Please.
Okay, so... Under the Surface. This documentary begins as a light-hearted glimpse into the lives of James and Liam Braithwaite, who make their living as magneteers, workers paid by local councils to fish through the canals and rivers of England with powerful magnets to remove shopping trolleys, bicycles, debris, and other dangerous or otherwise inconvenient items. However, as James and Liam begin work on a particular stretch of the Ashton Canal, they start receiving anonymous threats through the post to stop their magneteering, which only makes them wonder, what is there to hide under the surface?
Oh man, your blurbs are much more elaborate than mine. That's a magneteer is such a fantastic job title. The three magneteers would also have been... Okay, there's
yeah,
only, two,
like,
of
only
them.
Two of them.
Get a third in, and I mean, I'm sure that would have made much more at the box office. Okay, strong.
Okay,
let's hear the next one.
Next one, you've obviously heard of this phenomenon. So, Married to the Eiffel Tower... This documentary covers the lives of a group of women who are in love with large objects. They believe their relationships are reciprocal and that they can telepathically communicate with the objects. For example...
I didn't know that. That's so good.
Naisho is married to the Eiffel Tower. She has a passion for inanimate objects and her mission is to fight the stigma surrounding the disorder and create a global network of sufferers. Like Amy, in love with the church organ, and Elijah Rita, who married the Berlin Wall. In this compelling documentary
Amazing.
About objectum sexual disorder, the characters describe just what it's like to be in love with a highly public structure.
That must bring all kinds of unique challenges.
Yeah.
Because hundreds of tourists climb the Eiffel Tower every day. Like, how do you feel about that? Is that okay?
I guess you've got to have an open relationship, don't you?
To a degree, yeah. Or I guess, I mean, maybe the climbing just isn't anything. It doesn't matter. You know, your spouse talks to people, you're not going to stop them. That would be abusive, right? But if the Eiffel Tower starts telepathically communicating with anyone else, that's emotional cheating. We can't have it.
Yeah. I just feel sorry for Elijah, who married the Berlin Wall.
I was going to say, was that pre or post, like, bringing it down?
It must be pre, right?
Well, who knows, though? You know, like, back in the day, being a divorcee meant you were, like, ruined, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you'd already had a pregnancy, then, like, you're a fallen woman, no one's going to marry you now, sort of thing. Maybe being a wall that, you know, used to divide a nation under fascism and was brought down, and now it's, I say fascism, that's not correct at all, but...
Communism?
Yeah, that's the one. and was brought down. Like, maybe that's, you know, we all have our baggage, stuff happens in everyone's life, whatever, you're still a strong, beautiful wall that deserves love.
Yeah, there are a few parts of the Berlin Wall still standing, are there?
Yeah, yeah, with, like, graffiti on them and stuff. You can go, okay. I visited it a few years ago, went into railing.
Right, right. Okay. So, a call from Joy Bubbles. This is a fascinating look into the moving life story of Joe Ingressia, also known as Joy Bubbles. A blind boy with an IQ of 172 and perfect pitch, he became obsessed with telephones, which led him to discover phone phreaking, an act that allowed him to keep phone lines open simply by whistling the right tones. The result?
What?
Free phone calls to anywhere in the world and instant popularity on student campus. Turns out, he wasn't the only phone freak around, and Joe soon found himself at the centre of a subculture on a collision course with the phone company.
That is amazing. That's like a superhero thing. Like, phone freak is some, you know, some teen's alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
If you made this up, that's amazing. I want it to be real. That's very good.
Okay, next one. Ghost Trains of Old England.
Mm.
New Haven Marine is a station which is technically open and is served by one train a day, but the station is behind a locked fence and passengers are forbidden to board the train, which does not appear on any timetable. The company offers to provide a taxi service to any passenger in possession of a valid ticket, but it is impossible to buy a ticket. This documentary investigates the phenomenon of Britain's ghost trains, which run quietly and often completely empty for the sake of avoiding formal line closure.
Oh, what? What?
Yep.
These are all too good. That's amazing.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of us watching these documentaries after this, I think.
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, that's incredible. Okay, I'm pretty sure... Well, I know the phenomenon of marrying buildings exists, so you may have made up the documentary, but I'm going to go with that being real.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of magneteers or phone freaks, or these ghost trains. So this is really difficult. You found some really interesting ones. Amazing.
And I'm going to end on an anticlimax, because I just went for this one for the name.
Okay.
The awesome. Art of Walking to Doors. So this is the quite boring synopsis. Pablo Picasso, Andy Warhol, Leonardo da Vinci, all of them, it said, were dyslexic. But was there any connection between that and their work? Chris Ledgard visits the Royal College of Art in London, where he explores the relationship between dyslexia and dyspraxia and students' ability to draw. So, yes, possibly an interesting documentary, but the synopsis is not.
Did they just get the names mixed up? Was it meant to be like the art of walking into drawing or something?
The art of drawing into I don't know. Like, I don't know why close. They called it that. Yeah.
Interesting.
So yeah, you've got Under the Surface, Eiffel Tower, Call from Joy Bubbles, Ghost Trains of Old England, and The Boring One.
I feel like the boring one would have been the easiest one to come up with, because you could easily have found like that is a thing people have speculated about and invented a documentary. Mm-hmm. But I reckon you created one of the weird ones. Goodness. Okay. I'm going to go with the Magneteer one. I'm going to go with Under the Surface.
Damn it. We're too good at this. Yeah.
What happened? We used to be bad. Or was it just me used to be bad? Did you used to be good at guessing them? I can't remember.
I can't remember. I think
used to both get them.
No, it was unusual for us both to get them. But yeah, no, I made that one up. It is a real thing that people... I don't know if they're called Magneteers. I made up that name.
Did you?
But they do just like throw giant magnets into like waterways and just see what they find.
Amazing.
And like, yeah, there was one video I saw which like introduced me to this, where it was like, it was some bridge in America in a city, and they was throwing it over, and they're just pulling up knives, guns, all sorts from people just like disposing of weapons.
That makes sense, I guess. You get a lot of like weapons from crimes. Mm-hmm. A river's probably quite a good place to dump them.
Yep.
Magneteer is a great title that they should adopt if they haven't. Yeah. Honestly, that's amazing.
But yeah, Call from Joy Bubbles is real. I mean, I'd never heard of that before, and that was crazy.
I have no idea how phone lines work or used to work. I'm sure it's very different now. But yeah, like foxing the system, finding ways to hack it, because who would ever think to do this? And also only a machine could produce exactly the right note, surely. Yeah. And then it turns out, no, this guy.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Ghost Trains of Old England, they just have a load of trains that they run because it's too expensive to shut them down.
That is so weird.
It's just like that you have to pay a fee to close a line, so they're like, oh, we don't want to do that. We'll just run the minimum service, which no one can use.
That's a failure of society right there. That is just... Come on, guys. Yeah,
good old England.
Nice work, friends. Amazing. And nobody gets to ride these, like... Ah, come on. And you'd at least rent them out, surely. Like, make it a phenomenon, you know? Like, once a year, we have a special party on the ghost train. Tickets, you know, £1,000 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
Surely. Yep.
You'd think.
All right. I'm disappointed. I'm going to drown my disappointment in more nonsense. Here come my final three. Are you ready for some titles?
I am.
Let's see if we can go 3 for 3 on being correct.
If so, we might have to retire this segment, because...
We might, good lord.
It's got 2 pointless.
It's out of hand. Okay. We have My Kid Could Paint That in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What do you reckon?
Well, obviously that's a thing which people say about art quite often, is that, you know, especially modern abstract art, my kid could paint that, because, you know, often it's hard to see what it is and what the exact skill that they've used is. So, I guess it's a documentary about people who make abstract art, and maybe it's quite probing into, you know, that maybe the documentary maker has gone in quite hostile to be like, why is this art? What are you doing that's different to my kid? Maybe they've brought their kid along. She's brought her daughter with her. And, you know, as the artists create the art, she also gets her daughter to paint something as well. And then they, like, go out and find people and they have to, like, tell the difference between them.
It's like an investigative expose, like a Super Size Me thing, but for the art world.
Mm-hmm. And maybe they, like, you know, she gets her daughter's art and puts it under the artist's name and, like, tries to... you know, see how much it gets bid on for by the art critics.
See if the dealers can tell. That's fun. I like it. You're not a million miles off what I've got here. We'll get to that in a second. Next title. It is simply called Me, Myself, and I.
I would say it's about a group of triplets who all think they've all got the collective delusion that they are the same person.
Oh my goodness.
They all think they're the same person. They all think that they have the same relationship with one woman, presumably, who has somehow gone along with this and is happy to be part of this strange thing. And they all have the same interests. They do the same things. And they just, like, it's about the very intricate way that they have to maintain their delusion by always being in different parts of their one life at the same time.
Wonderful. Yes. Very good. That's a lot better. Cancel this one. Do make that instead. Outstanding. Okay. And finally, we have Happy Father's Day.
Oh. This sounds more like a film than a documentary name.
Mm-hmm. Like a daddy daycare type.
Yeah, like a lighthearted thing which you'd release on Father's Day and which no one would watch.
That's true.
Happy Father's Day. What could this be about apart from Father's Day? I don't know. It's about a man who is a father on a
That's
day.
That's a strong start. Yes. So it's just a real slice of life. They just follow him from the moment he wakes up to the moment he goes to bed, just one day.
I tell you what, no. It's about priests, because they're fathers, right? Yes.
Oh, okay.
And it's about a day in the life of this monastery, and they're sort of talking to them. Oh, it's a monastery which has become a daycare, and so they're looking after kids, and it's about, like, this is going dark, though. It's not dark. It's not dark. It's
fine.
It does.
Yeah, it's not in 100% of cases that it has
to go exactly.
Horribly.
It's just fine in this case. And, but it's about, like, how men who have no kind of intimate relationships with people or families of their own, really, you know, in that sense, they're not actually fathers, how they talk to, I don't know. Immediately it's getting weird, and I don't like that I've gone down this route. So it's about a dad and his day, and he has a nice day.
All right, no priests, forget about those. Yep. This guy has a nice day. Excellent.
I think I nailed it.
Certainly did. All right, that one diverged a little bit from what I have here. Let's see how we deal with the the official synopses. So we have My Kid Can Paint That. A 4-year-old child began painting sprawling abstract art that her parents sold for premium prices. There was a lot of press coverage, which called into question whether she was a child prodigy or simply a creative girl who had a little help. And if she did, should it matter? How do we define art? My Kid Could Paint That investigates her process, but it also sheds light on the world of abstract art and the question of who gets to decide whether a creative impulse is valid.
Okay.
It's nice, that one. Yeah, not a million miles from what you were talking about. Just focusing on one specific child. And then Me, Myself, and I. So I'm not going to name him, but a 1980s actor wrote and starred in this documentary dedicated entirely to himself. Which I just, what a great project. Like, hey, what are you working on these days? I haven't seen you in a film. Oh, I'm making a film all about myself. Oh, what, like you wrote a story and you're starring in it? No, it's just about me, just my life. Through the course of it, we are led on a tour of his everyday life, which includes a one-on-one hockey game with a middle-aged man, specifically a middle-aged man, him modeling the latest fashions, and several quote-unquote heartfelt talks about what a decent guy he is.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that has been done. Whether it is called Me, Myself, and I. Yeah, I think that's probably real. I bet someone's narcissistic enough to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, finally, slightly different tack. Happy Father's Day. This 2009 film showcases one New Yorker's touching journey to fatherhood. Which apparently was complicated because he'd had a vasectomy some years previously.
Right.
Thinking ahead there. But fortunately, he had donated to a sperm bank beforehand, which had kept his samples on ice, but a legal mishap apparently resulted in his vengeful ex-wife gaining custody of it. So we follow them through years of legal battles and the remarkable determination it sometimes takes to start a family.
Okay, that's fun. Okay, so I think it's between the first and the last one. It could be either, to be honest. I'm going to go with my kid could paint that.
Oh, thank God. Streak broken.
Yay! I got it wrong.
Happy Father's Day is fake.
Okay. Fair enough.
I just liked the idea of a custody battle over a sperm sample, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I also like the idea of
battle with
shining
a light
on... Yes, that's great also. Or the combo, which when we did Hyperfakical's art installation edition, one of the fake ones involved falling custard. So there is a melange to be created there.
Oh, right. Well, at least we can officially continue with this segment if there are any more ideas to be had.
That's true.
Because yeah. I got one wrong. Do we want to discuss the ones which we left out because we had overlap?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a list of like 4, 5, 6. I've got 7 here, which I think were a combo of either too gruesome or too overlappy. Do we want to like run through them? How many have you got?
Well, I've only got like 2, I think, that are worth talking about. Because there's one which was Finders Keepers, which was fun.
Oh, yeah, talk about that.
Fun in quotation marks. So this is the summary that I got. It all starts when John Wood loses his amputated leg. As in, the leg is amputated, given back to him, he mummifies it, and leaves it in a storage facility that accidentally auctioned it off when the bill wasn't paid. But that's not the weird part.
It's not.
The leg falls into the hands of Shannon Wisnant, a man determined to find fame and fortune. So, of course, he does what any attention-hungry person would do. He fights tooth and nail to retain custody of the legs that he thinks is his, despite Wood's insistence that he deserves his leg back.
Amazing. I think that's what gave me the idea for the sperm-based custard, custody war.
Yeah. Sperm-based custard.
Just the idea... No. Just the idea of people having to fight to reclaim ownership of body parts that they've, like, sold is funny to me. Because there is a, you know, a weird line there. It's like, yeah, but that's my leg. It's like, well, you sold it to me. I'm not giving it back. I paid for this. And then it's like, why do you want my leg? And it's like, well, why do you want your leg? You had it amputated, you know? It's just, like, the most nonsensical desire. Like, why does anyone want this leg? And yet...
Yeah.
Very good. Strong. I think we talked about Three Identical Strangers, which we both knew about.
Yeah, which I'd seen. Have you seen?
Yes, I think so. And it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's so good. I'd recommend anyone watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Triplets, born in 1961.
And they all think they're the same person. No.
Yeah, it's very good. It shows them reconnecting and then finding out like why they were separated at birth to begin with, and then it gets
real
chilling.
Weird. Yeah, it's like it's got so many plot twists. It's ridiculous that it's real.
Yeah, it's a real. Yeah, it's tremendous.
Mm. I also had one about which was called Tickled.
Oh yes,
which was about competitive endurance tickling.
Marvelous.
But it's sort of like about. The person who's doing the documentary wants to have an interview with the video's producer of the people who made this video about endurance tickling. But the company like responds really like hostile in a really hostile way. And they like in a, quite a homophobic way as well. And so then he like tries to dig deeper into why they are being so weird about the fact that he just wants to talk to them about this video, which he thought was quite fun.
Yep.
So haven't seen that one. Don't know if I will, but...
Me neither. Did you have Crazy Love on your list?
I don't think I did. I think I'd heard of it, which is why I said you shouldn't do that one, because I'd gone, I know that name.
Yeah, all I know about it is that it's about a story of true love gone wrong, which is a combo crime/romance documentary, which apparently has a twist so bizarre you almost don't want to believe it. And apparently after attempting to end their relationship, Linda is literally blinded by him, Burton. Yeah, but that's not the twist. This devastating crime of passion is only the beginning of their story. Yeah, by the end of it, they're married, apparently.
Oh, no.
So somewhere along the line, things get real interesting.
Yeah. That doesn't sound good.
It doesn't, but I wish them all the best. And along the lines of things that don't sound good, Grizzly Man was on my list. But it's very grizzly.
It is. I've read up on Grizzly Man. It's not it's not a happy ending in that case.
No. Suffice it to say, a man who lives with bears and then it goes poorly.
Was that the... It's a Werner Herzog one, isn't it?
Is that the name of the guy?
I think so. The guy who talks like this, Werner Herzog.
He's got a very famous voice.
He's a famous documentarian and filmmaker.
But, okay.
Yeah. I think there's a bit where he, like, listens to the guy as he's... spoilers. Anyone who doesn't want to know, turn off now. Spoilers, killed by bears. Mm-hmm. And he, like... There's a recording of it, and he listens to it, and it's just, like, horrifying.
Yeah. And his girlfriend as well, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just murdered by the bears that they wanted to live among. It's not so good.
Not great.
Not
and on
so
that,
good.
Happy note... It's the end of the show!
Yay!
Well, join us next time when we will discuss something that doesn't involve being killed by bears. Hopefully.
I don't know, Andy. I've just had a great idea for a segment.
I thought you were going to say for a sitcom.
It's just people getting mauled by bears. Every week sitcom. A new character gets mauled. Who's it going to be this time?
Oh, God. That was the Hypotheticals podcast. Adriano, where can people find us online?
We're all over the place, Andy.
Oh, we're everywhere.
That's right. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Just search for Hypotheticals. That is Hypotheticals, the weird way we spell it, but without the R.
Yes, and if you would like to leave us a rating on a podcast app of your choice, be that Acast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, whatever they may take some digging, but if you could leave us a 5-star rating, it would mean that we would get more than at least 5 listeners.
We would love you so, so much. And please, why not tell a friend who might enjoy listening to our dulcet tones. And we will see you next time.
Bye!
Because I actually...
what was that noise?
That was the noise of me resizing a window. Do you not make sound effects for your computer?
not often. I'm imagining people who put in new windows in houses also make that sound.
You're resizing, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Life's more fun that way, what can I tell you?
Wedding, wedding finery for
edifices.
Eddie's edifice and edifice. What would it be? Edifice something emporium.
Eddie's edifice and
Weddie's wedifice.
Eddie Weddles is Edifice Wedding Emporium.
Yes.
Is that good?
I think so.
Eddie Weddles is Edifice Wedding Outfitters.
Eddie Weddles, Edifice Wedding Emporium.
Edifice, wonderful.
Edifice Wedding... Wedding Dress Emporium?
What's his name? Eddie Weddles is Edifice Wedding Dress Emporium.
Edifice Wedding Excellence. Ugh.
Excellent. Eddie. Eddie Weddlerus is Edifice. Eddie Weddle.
Eddie Walrus is.
Eddie.
I need to write this down.